We have high hopes that it'll change.
How many do you want?
That we'll be able to provide them, yeah.
Well, of course, it depends on the price, you know, and whether they're young and such and that sort of thing, but I would like to get a
Mr. Stratman, why don't you participate in the two public hearings coming up this fall?
Where are they? Okay.
The first one will be either the 16th or the 17th. We haven't pinned the date down yet in Fairbanks. But the second one will be at the annual board of game meeting, which establishes policy on disposal of this community. The 29th or 30th of November. I really invite you to please come to us.
And if you can't get there physically, written testimony can be entered into this.
Okay, if you'll send me a written something, I'll try to get something out. Do they ever, is there a possibility that they would sell animals other than animals that are going to be called out, the old animals?
They would grant them. Discussions that they are, the terms that they are having now.
You pay the transportation charges. What we're hoping to do is to get the program of granting animals with a commitment from the ranch to return the same number of animals to the state for transportation.
Barring for a while to get your herd. This is essentially the type of program that the Bureau of Indian Affairs used in the ranger industry for many, many years.
That's right.
They would have government deer, they would put them on loan to a herder, establish a herd, and then over a period of years, he would return to the government.
We really think that we would. The good thing about that is you're not fucking money, you're not necessarily transferring title. So we're not telling you how much they loan.
You asked how we get the natives in, so I have another idea. When we get our sausage plant going, our product, is to have someone from the extension service going to all these villages, and we just like to do it in Antioch somewhere, another harvest festival, and someone that knows how to cook. You know me, a lot of it's in the cooking, and have them put on a demonstration to cook this meat and serve this sausage in these villages. And I think it'd make an impression, maybe not just once. Maybe once a year. It's going to take a while to get these natives going.
Agricultural product.
I might even send my wife down there. She good cooking. Well, I think
look
so.
Look at you, man. Yeah, she's good cooking.
Speaking of food.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, somebody.
I'm not hungry at all.
Oh, you don't really either.
Anyway, Omar, we really do think the end of those.
I'd be
interested in talking to Muscat, too. Hey, glad you said that.
Obviously, the
man
needs to be at that public hearing.
No.
I'll
be there on the 29th and 30th.
That's the main
one in Anchorage.
Main
one in Anchorage. I hadn't heard about the one
on
the 15th.
I may wind up
that as well.
Yep.
I really feel that both Muscat and Buffalo are potentially valuable lands and ranch information. It's my task being. Today's philosophy as well, in fact, probably just about better, but we should do everything we can to get these in hand for the information. And I personally do it totally
Well, if I get some...
And have one land that won't take what you have.
Yeah. Of course, we have, I guess, the state owned these, right? There wouldn't be any problem, but I don't know what BLM needs to do. Maybe we search that problem to...
Qualify as animal
yeah. Well, you lose cattle and things like that. That's something. Okay, that I don't want to get just one or two animals. I want to get a minimum of 10 head because, you know.
Groups of 30 are talking. Groups of 30 we're talking.
Groups of 30.
Someone brought it to attention today. There is still an amount of buffalo, for example, on the animals who are affected by law.
Well, as I said, now there was a suit in Canada, which kind of set a precedence too, where they essentially the suit set the same thing. because they were, remember the boss, Tars, the boss, they considered them as domestic animals. There's somewhere I'm gonna talk with that. But I put in for, on this mustox, and I put in all of them. I haven't, never have received, I put in for an application, but I never have seen, received anything, an application itself or a second.
So older than a bench for 5 years.
Just on what?
Yes.
Well, yeah, right, we got that later. But I mean, as far as when I put an application, for a certain number of animals, I never have received a, like I said, I could get it. Well, Teal is going to have them for 5 years. What?
The fishing game wrote you a letter and sent it? When?
This week. Oh,
it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, a couple.
We got a copy of that letter?
Well, I can sure get you a copy.
That'd be nice.
But yeah. That's one of our pet projects right now, is to get something straightened out in these muskox. We've got these boys that have been meeting about 10 days on it.
Well, they essentially said that.
I didn't think that it was possible.
We're all young and optimistic. We still think some things are possible. They have a cabot program. They're going to farm them out. They're in the next 5 years. You see how the program goes. They got some ladies over here.
See, they restricted reproduction of those muskox and tried to keep the herd in the minimum so that nobody could get any of them. They're going to try to change them.
Well, is that what's happened? I wondered because, you know, you heard about them about 15 years ago.
There ought to
be
1,000 head by now.
Powerful army government.
I thought they were the government.
Well, I'd like to give them. This fellow's held on. I'd like to get them transferred under the jurisdiction of the Division of Agriculture. We felt we'd go with this loan program, just turn them out to farmers and then turn them back to 70% every year and have it arranged that every year so we can get enough for another one.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be, you know, you'd still have problems with it, but you ought to find
Well, you don't expect
that.
If you get
mustaches,
you have to make sure you're
aware of
how to mix.
Yep. There's something else I'd like to ask, Lieutenant.
Go ahead. I'm relaxed now, see.
If any of you have state leases, the leasing policy is coming up for review this fall. And there will be a symposium in Anchorage the first week in December for the purpose of reviewing the current state leasing policies of grazing land and looking at something for the future. If there needs to be a mandatory grazing lands classification, which would put additional state lands into private hands, so on. But you might think about that as a cooperative, then if you do have state leases that you're holding now.
I'm the only one here that has state lease. Of course, when the Navy question is settled, like probably all of the LLCs will be in state leases. Do you know, now somebody was telling me that the law which guarantees that of the original BLM lease after it's selected by states, you know, was to, that was guaranteed another term of, I forget how the law reads, but it's at the same benefits that the BLM leases hold, you know, for a like term of time. Someone told me that was canceled, is that right?
I do know that, I do know this much, that my neighbor who has one of those BLM leases is assured of his option for an additional 20 years. That much I know for certain, because I checked on it through the additional plan.
There were a couple people I had to check on that were basically calling out of it, who were going to raise their mother. I don't know if it was attached or not. I just suspect it was. By not having their renewals, signing with renewal during this interim period, they didn't sign a renewal with BLM, and BLM said the state would honor that renewal, but the state would honor the renewal, and the state said, you don't have a lease with BLM because you haven't signed it. We can't honor anything except for the state. We can't honor the renewal except for the state.
You know, the lease that I have expires in 1983, and I thought there was a possibility that should be renewed now, because I thought...
five-year period.
Well, I thought it was a five-year period, but when I tried to renew it, they said, no, it was just 6 months. I've waited until 6 months, and that's...
I believe that's correct, though. I believe it is a 6 month.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I'm getting to the point now. In fact, John's been out there trying to discard some of that land and put it into a better grass species. And boy, it's really tough to try and do that. And I'm probably crazy to spend all that money when I've only got to have 3 more years on it. And it would seem like maybe that's something else you could do is waiting until 6 months before a lease expires on a 20-year lease is really a pretty poor situation, especially if we're talking about, you know, a man putting several thousand dollars worth of improvements.
This is on your BLM lease?
Well, it's a BLM lease that went to the state. It's a Calson Bay lease there, you see. Now, last year, I broke up about, what's in that piece of red, about 10 acres, I hope. And part of it's on my homestead, part of it's down on my lease, you know. And every time I went across the line, you know, it's one field, I just thought, you crazy for, you know, going out there and spending all that money on state land when I've only got 3 years left to go. It would seem that renewal could be done before a 6 month period.
Why don't we could we approach it also from another angle, and that is an angle of having a sale of some little land that you use to crop agricultural rights sale?
Well, yeah, but I don't think we're going to do that, though, while it's tied up in the court system.
No, I don't think it's going to be any better, so while it's tied up in the court.
I think it could at least be renewed.
You ask about leases, I'd like to give you a case in point here. Situation. I've been in my place 23 years. I had a 20-year lease, and I was eligible to renew 5 years before it expired. The day that I was eligible to renew, the land claims, Native land claims, became effective. I think that was January 1, 1971. So the Natives selected that lease. I was granted a 3-year extension, which is up January 1. I was at the land office, well, 3 offices this week. BLM, they didn't know what the status of the lease was, and they had referred me to the federal building downtown across from the museum, and I couldn't find anybody there to put anything, to give me a status of the existing lease. So I went over to the state building, and they were all out hunting moose. So I couldn't get any results there, and I told my chief to come back. Oh, yeah. So that's where it stands. And the Natives have the lease. And there, I've been there 23 years. That's pretty well what's happened to Cavendish.
Well, what happens now, take this my case in point, which is a BLM lease. It's in good standing, always has been. And it was canceled to allow state selection, like the law reads. What happens if this this land still in litigation in 1983, Now, the law says that the state is obligated to issue a new lease to a, you know, to me, giving me the same benefits that I enjoyed before under BLM. And so, regardless, if the law doesn't address the fact that there's litigation, whether or not there's litigation going on. So I feel like the state is obligated, you know, to renew that lease when the time comes. Now, maybe they can't renew it until 6 months. Now, the reason they're wanting to wait until 6 months is because they're using the BLM regulations to administer the lease, and I guess that's what BLM regulations call for, although I thought those were changed a few years ago, but I sure couldn't find the evidence of change when they changed the...
I don't know, obviously I have a lot to learn about this.
I think the state could if they wanted
to. Here's something about
agriculture leases are supposed to be handled as now through RV.
Here's something that's real important that should be looked into. Before the native land claims came along, all of these leases were tentatively accepted by the state. In fact, the state took the initiative. I have correspondence in my file to that effect. So when the native land claims came along, I also have correspondence of the state withdrawing from that responsibility. I don't know where they felt that was the easiest way to get out of it. Legal hassle, but I have correspondence tell me to disregard any longer the state selecting the lease, and I would remain on the BLM.
Well, the natives got in ahead of the state, that's what happened. The only reason that I got, that I, my lease was selected there, was the fact that I happened to be up there, and they indicated that go along with it, with the state selection, and waive my 30-day appeal time. Why they expected this, you know, they felt that they could cancel this, and the state could accept that lease before the days of state claims. They approved it. A lot of people knew that this was filed. And so that is what I did. And made it possible, but on the other side, they waited too long. But Nick, getting back to you, does that mean then that you will be administering the grazing lease too?
You get grazing lease and agricultural lease.
Both. When are you going to take on that responsibility?
We have the basic responsibility has already been determined, but we have it now. As a practical matter, we can't do that until we get our staff transferred to our shop.
Got it made. Just go down and see him the first year.
Sounds,
and get him
easy. Sounds too easy then.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen a lot done about it myself.
There's already, you're sure this is going to happen?
They told me. I have a responsibility for agricultural leases and programming of any sales of agricultural lands.
Grazing, it's going to be here.
The state's getting really excited now about these tentative selected lands. They felt they missed the boat.
Well, those are the ones that we held in advance, I think, pulling the land from.
What year was the land?
1974. Well, yeah, but the first thing was around
66. The trees were 66. So I think it was 67 when I started.
Anyway, the real blow to the calendar because it was in the making for 75 years.
Well, there's a possibility then that you can renew that. At least will you be writing some regulations there?
Well, that's the things that I have to learn is whether my legal restrictions on renewals, because I know that there are some legal restrictions and there are some regulatory restrictions, and if they're regulatory, then we can't change the regulations. If they're discretionary regulatory, then it's just my decision. If it's legal, then we have to go to these gentlemen and get them changed off. And of course, there's also the question of whether it is a legal, by another aspect of legal, not just the law.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Court.
If
a court deal.
Yes, right, sheriff, it'll meet the attorney general's.
Right, and he's my lawyer. So, those are the kind of questions that I've got to treat sometime between now and,
Sir, can they say we're going to have a seminar on grazing and leasing policy for the state in December, okay? And we're going to be trying to get a group like this who are interested in grazing together and sit down and come up with some recommendations for legislation. So that's the time to talk about changing the law.
Or regulations, or which regulations. I think the two people really should be, make a point to be there, because that's...
Well, I'd like to come, but it's hard for me to get away and...
Is there any reason why there couldn't be a hearing in a place like Kodiak?
There's no reason why we couldn't have a living here in Europe.
Most of the leases are, as far as cattle, should have one.
We don't want to take so, everything.
Yeah, it's not where...
Is the state in a position to recommend other land suitable for ranching in the state?
Right now, yes.
Yeah, or...
Even what they call public entity. What they call the...
Yes, I'm familiar with that, but where's the land?
Well, where do you...
You tell us where you think it is. Well, that's what I'm asking.
You tell us where you think it is.
Tell us where it is.
Well, south and south.
That's one of the questions you asked, but that's what you wanted.
Right.
It's pretty hard to find on Kodiak.
Well, then...
Let's see.
Then you want to be at Kodiak. Anywhere they think there is some, that's the stuff that we want to tell them, that we want to set this aside for long-term leases or whatever.
Nick, will you keep them, keep me or maybe others to advise regarding these hearing dates?
I'll be happy to.
Kelly's setting it up, right? I think I'll just leave it to her. That's okay, her.
Did you have a comment to make, Kelly, about the possibility of having a seminar in places?
Well, the problem that I saw of having it down here is that these grazing leases are going to apply to people other than having cattle or sheep. Also applying to the ranger. Of course, it would be kind of a hardship to think of.
Where can we get a mountain state selected land?
Do
you have a division lands office down here?
No, the state doesn't have it.
If the cooperative would be interested in proposing some of the TA or tentatively selected land for grazing, potential grazing, I'd be happy to send you in there.
We can get you
delighted.
Yeah. Well, Shearwater Peninsula is a great place, but I don't know where the natives selected that. How about selected there?
What you need then, if you're looking at those kinds of decisions, you need a tax plan.
Well, I know Fish and Game has been interested ever since that was in the States for a little reserve of their own.
They're interested in it.
They probably have a bear refuge here, they'd like to have another one.
There's been a number of applications for grazing this year.
Yeah. On the last one.
Yeah.
You run down? You mean I'm going to go eat now?
I understand that the kitchen closed at
10:50.
That's right. Yeah, well, there's a pizza place
down there. Sully.
He's there for a lot of day, thanks.
Kitchen doesn't close until 10:30.
Oh.
When are you fellas going back to Hank and Palmer? Didn't anybody go through Palmer?
I'm going back tomorrow.
Are you going through Palmer?
That's where I work, yeah.
I want to send Cartula some frozen salmon.
I can get it to you?
Yeah, okay.
I'll
try to get it to you in the morning.
I'll be leaving on the 8 o'clock flight, assuming the weather permits. And I'll be heading right. Pardon?
Is that flight at 8 o'clock?
You told me I'd be there today. I guess these are mine.
You going in the morning or when?
One morning.
Is that a wing flight?
Wing flight? Yeah. I'd be happy to. I'm going to get right in the car and Anchorage and drive right to Palmer. Right by the door. I'm happy to.
Gave me a bunch of vegetables all day, you're going to do a good job. Well, thank you very much for attending, and I'd like to thank the Ag Committee also. The situation is such that some of the land claims are beginning to get worked out to the extent now that there's a little less uncertainty on some of the branches than there's been in the past, and that should set the stage for some commitments with respect to financing and
capital procurement construction that could permit us to move ahead with expanding the industry. I think it's very important.
Well, we have to get the natives into the cattle. They're going to increase production because they have the land. Can't have cattle ranches without land.
I think the natives are interested in it. As a matter of fact, I had hoped that we could have had Mike Waller here tonight. You remember he was at our May meeting, and he asked me to get in touch with Fred Peterson, who's the KANA, Frank Peterson. And I called him twice today, and first time nobody answered, and the second time the little boy answered and said that he was not at home. So I hope that I could get him here tonight since Mike Waller couldn't be here. But Mike has assured me that the natives are interested in this. And I think if they are, obviously this slaughterhouse facility is going to be as important to them as it is to the cooperative, because if they're going to raise cattle, they have to have some means of marketing it. So this can be an important thing to them. And maybe it will be an encouragement to them to move ahead in the cattle production area themselves. But in the meantime, you know, we're not controlling them.
No.
But the cooperative is controlling itself. And the cooperative ought to begin to make some plans with respect to what it needs and how it ought to go about trying to increase the meat production.
Is that an agricultural project that NEAC is up to the university?
No.
That's a direct grant. From the legislature.
I was over there. I was impressed with what they were doing.
That sounded pretty good.
They know. I've been around the island, but not necessarily Lesnar, but going to the south, Old Harbor to the south. And even including Old Harbor, if you want to say first, to me, this grass land is on the southern end of this island. All like my role in the grass land out there. Potential down there for great people. That one Halifax Peninsula.
Hi, how you doing?
And it's nothing to do with grass there, it's just miles. And the villages down there, if they could be induced to go on into it, could produce a lot of beans.
Well, I'm glad you brought that point up about getting natives involved. We feel that you remember when we first had the last meeting, we were very adamant that the natives be invited to this camp. I think because of their ownership in the land, I think they be involved, and I'd like to see, it's very difficult for us to, possible for us as either state agency or legislature or anybody to command that people get involved, but if you're going to get the program that you need, whether it's extension, research, loans from the loan fund, or what have you, it's going to have to be because the people here in this area support those programs, and both factions do what they can to get these things back. That's simple. You can't have only a part of your body down here working in support of the program. If these fellows are on the receiving end of that kind of support, they're bearing out. You have to have a unified front. The natives admittedly are not highly conversant with the ins and outs of the beef industry, but I think they're going to have to learn it.
Well, I'll tell you, until we had Fred Zorro down there, we never had anybody from Kodiak give any kind of support whatsoever to beef industry. And he had gone out of the way.
And he would have been here this evening if it had not been for Mike Waller getting married up in Anchorage tomorrow. But they were both headed up there at the same time we came in here. So I'm sure that he is interested in this and would be as helpful as possible. But the thing is that no elected representative can really be any more effective than the trust that he has from the people who are behind him. And in this case, it seems to me that if the beef industry is really going to move forward on Kodiak, that it's going to take a really positive approach for that expansion by the people here, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the cooperative itself or a conglomeration of the cooperative plus the natives or whatever. There's going to have to be some strong local support for developing a red meat industry along the lines that has been envisioned for, what, 20 years here now? But now we're getting to the point where it's time to move, time to do something.
Well, a lot of those, when Jim came in, I made a joke about when he came in and everything was done. I hate to say that to you, Uncle, but everything's done.
If I didn't know that, I wouldn't come in, because I'm tired.
He's just hungry, Uncle.
I don't know,
at this point, really, think we've decided things, but you are here.
What did you guys just tell me about it?
I don't.
Yeah. I can review this quickly.
If you've got questions, you know, we'd like to
answer. Well, okay. Basically, just very quickly, I think we have three or four major points. Number one is that we're going to try to develop cooperatively with the co-op and or with a representative from the co-op, and with myself representing the university, lease agreement, which would permit the university to lease a segment of the building facility for the slaughterhouse, and something on the order of 10 acres on the existing 33 acres. The purpose would be to permit us to use our bond issue money to construct appropriate facilities for marketing research, freezer, sausage maker, smoker, offal treatment, high treatment, and so on. It right adjacent or in connection with the existing building, and then it has the other 10 acres available so that in the event we get funds in the future for more dead meat programs here, we'll have a place to do feeding trials, to possibly work with fish waste, ensilage, and so on. So that's the step number one, and that would also include working out a letter of agreement or a memorandum of agreement which would set down the basic principles as to what the co-op would do in the facility and what the universities are doing. So,
that includes paying utilities, so we want to pay utilities, clean up the ground, whatever.
Anything necessary to keep the thing in operation. The purpose in doing this would be to provide a long-term, low-cost, whatever that is, $1 a year, $10 a year, whatever the legal requirement is now, for the university to have the land and the segment of the facility so that the regents in turn can legally commit the bond issue money for capital construction. So that would be the plan which we would have for getting underway with respect to the expenditure of the bond issue. And I guess really that's the major point.
That's the major point. There are a few other things that we discussed. One, we discussed the need for an operating budget when we get the facility constructed. We discussed, I suggested that to fit the need of the university into your overall plan area, that you come up with an overall plan area, what you're going to do with your property. I think that's going to get the girl off the back. I think that's important. You clear that up. I'll do it. I don't know if you think anything else.
Well, years,
right, we did. Again, I'm guessing at that. I don't know. What we're going to need, I'm sure, to satisfy the Board of Regents is a lease for a long enough period of time to amortize any capital improvements that the university puts into this through the bond issue. And so I'm sure it would be a minimum of 30 years. The only leases that Sig and I are familiar with now are 55 years. But it might be possible to get something a little shorter than that. The objective then would be to develop the capital construction facility necessary for the kind of program that we're talking about. And remember, we're basing this all on the meeting that we had last May, in which the ranchers indicated that they felt the needs for marketing research were really more prominent than any other needs that they had right at the moment.
Yeah, I think we discussed that again in July. That's true.
I guess the other thing we might summarize is the time frame we're talking about. This is to try to get a lease agreement and a substantial planning effort ready so that we have a proposal and a plan and are on the move prior to time legislative session so that we can explain what we're doing with the bond issue money, which I must expect.
That's right.
It gives us a little bit of time, but it doesn't give us much.
At least agreement surgery.
Yeah, right.
And I did bring up all my, I guess the possibility if the man was capable for it, of being part-time manager and part-time technical expert or whatever his job is, in order that we might tie the both facilities together, and I think we all realize that we do need a manager.
But
I think it's going to be a larger facility. Both ends are going to have to work together.
That's part of the operational program that we'll have to follow the captain.
At the moment, we don't have any funds for operational programs.
Yeah,
really have capital construction. But we would hope that if we can build a case and show that we've got a good program plan, that we could get operational funds.
Yeah. I presume you're going to talk to him to us before it just goes, we'll have some input before we turn an architect loose.
Well, here's what we have planned just very briefly on that. First thing we'll do is get a lease arrangement worked up that's agreeable to the cooperative and the university.
I think we put it upon that, that we decide generally going to focus on, and we went and said that you people as a group could sit down and kind of come up with a draft of what you thought would be proper, and then you could get together either the two representatives or generally the group.
Yeah. One thing that I do think is that those buildings should be tied together, and the reason I think this is because when you start moving meat around, you want it in a building all the time. When you have to start putting it in a vehicle and moving it, well then you're running into all kinds of problems. And so while it might be better administratively to have the two buildings separate, well, I think they should do it.
I don't think administration calls care whether there's a wall between it or whether there's 20 feet between it.
That's no problem.
Well, I would like to see
the one thing that we did talk about also was that it's the common practice of the university planning department to employ consultants when it comes to developing any new facility. And in this particular case, we don't have a lot of people in Alaska who are experts on on the construction of small slaughterhouses. And so I would suggest that as the planning office moves ahead with this, that they bring in someone who has had experience in constructing small slaughterhouses for major firms in other parts of the country, come into Kodiak, look over our situation here, help make judgments on what the best marketing tools are that we can have for the red meat industry here, and then go ahead and develop the facility on the basis of those priorities that they would recommend. And of course, that would result in a consultant report then, which we could look at with the university and the cooperative and make our final decision as to how we do.
Before we review this too much, we might consider the other parts of the question.
Well, Omar, I don't know if this, I think that basically covers everything that we've talked about. And,
I've got one more question. Do you know if we have a copy of a block or some other?
I think the other purpose of our meeting was to give an opportunity for the House Ag Committee to visit with the ranchers and for the ranchers to express any thoughts that they might have concerning the agricultural development here on Kodiak and, or perhaps in other places in Alaska, on the Aleutian and so on. And, I don't know who wants to be chairman of that committee.
DeWitt made the point about needing to get the native involved with the entire process, which I thought was a valid one, and I'm just saying that either people do something they came after.
Well, all the natives have to do is just check out some of their long green and buy some cattle. There's cattle for sale, you know. All they have to do is just buy them, and then they're in the cattle business, and they can go from there, you know. I guess they've got quite a bit of land around the island, and I would encourage them to do that, you know.
Well, I think
will they buy them here outside in Palmer, or where they buy them? I think that I've been to talk for a number of years, and I would definitely like to see if they get started. I think I kind of get a little bit head shy, I guess, of people that are always talking about what they're going to do and never seem to get started, you know. It's awful easy to talk a big story and, you know, talk about it. It's not quite as easy to say, well, this is what I have.
On the other hand, if, you know, they do have a resource, and if we're going to make this, we've been developed the way it should out here, we're going to want to use that resource in some manner or other. That means that the door, it should be pretty plain, I think, to them. The door is open to them to at least, you know, participate in the decisions that affect the industry. That's my feeling about it.
That's right, but only after they're full-fledged members of this. In other words, I don't want them to make any decisions with regard to the cooperative until they are in the position.
I'm not talking about making a decision. I'm talking about, you know, keeping them informed.
Oh, yeah,
sure. It's a learning process for them. You've got to realize it's it'd be like you going out to run a dairy farm. You haven't run a dairy farm. Gardening is a learning process involved, and it would be advantageous for you as a dairyman to go talk to other dairymen. And that's what we're talking about, that kind of thing. So that they understand what we're trying to do with this money, and that would be the idea of getting them to be the money. No, I don't think there's no way that you can have them make decisions.
Now, in every village, there's usually a key person. That key person is not always interested in agriculture, but some villages they are. Now, I know of Larson Bay. They're here receiving a large area of land, and it has tremendous potential for cattle. And the key person in this village has chickens, and I recently bought two hogs from it, has a number of hogs. Always been interested in livestock. And that's the type of person you need in every village with information, propaganda, to enhance the interest in agriculture. Now, you won't find it in too many villages. But that's where you need to start.
Of course, if your slaughterhouse here has expanded facilities for marketing, I think when the natives get into the livestock business, you know, they're going to be encouraged to do it if you've got a better facility here for
them. Well, that's true.
It'll help once we can put the product in.
That's right. Exactly.
I think it might be a little unfair to pick on it too much because, you know, they've had a resource of land selected, but they really haven't had it. You know, they get there.
They don't know what they're going to do with the land themselves.
So they get a title passed.
And they still don't have title here.
No, and they realize they'll have a tax problem not too many years down the road.
But anyway, that's anything else. I don't know how they're happy. You guys are expensive. That's been down before. It's talking about it's pretty expensive that you've been through this.
I don't know what your plans are on freight, getting your barley down here, but that's your number one problem.
We're going to ask you to solve that.
Just build a bridge from there to Homer.
Sounds like a longshore.
I'll tell you what. Maybe the legislature can get some consideration on the ferry for farmers and ranchers till we get the thing going. Why can't we get a reduced rate? Like right now, I've gone over there. I've found hay. I've found barley, but I can't make it feasible paying the rate on the ferry to take a truck over there and load it up and bring it back.
I think that if the cooperative came up with a specific plan to turn out a specific number of animals, you know, a substantial increase to what we have now, and a specific feeding system for those animals with respect to the hay, silage, natural grassland, grain, and could present that plan in terms of specific needs for grain, that a very good possibility might exist of getting some sort of legislative approval for some kind of what would basically amount to a transportation subsidy for that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
You've got to have a plan. You've got to have a specific plan. You've got to do
it. We can compare cost the state side versus Delta.
Necessary for legislation for the ferry system to establish another tariff rate for intrastate movement of state products.
State commodities or something.
Let me put this out. Farming equipment, for
example. Well, not only farming, if you did it, you see,
that's true.
You see,
they could have a rate on the space available situation, too. The ferry comes over half empty most of the time. They want to charge just as much for that empty space as they do the full space. So if you're sitting there with a truck and not full,
For the transfer of intrastate commodities, it wouldn't be possible to have a lot of it.
Right now, I can go to Massachusetts and I can dig my own spuds for $8 a hundred. I can buy cabbage, 19 cents a pound, and carrots, and all those other nice vegetables, and they buy them as quick as you can put them up off the truck right here in Florida.
Yes, sir.
And I'm tempted to do it, but whenever you weigh the freight against going and getting them, you can't come out too well.
The freight's that big an item.
Well, you can sell a truckload of carrots. Every time you get on that thing, they charge you $100 for going across the dock or something like that.
See, we just took a little pelt over there, what? Cost us $100.
Yeah, $86 for this
thing. That's just a little car.
That's over and back. Okay.
But you would almost have to have a 5-ton truck, which I have, to haul vegetables.
Well, yeah, you see, it's one thing to haul vegetables. If you get to hauling grain, well, you've got to haul, if you're going to haul very much grain, you're talking about hauling a semi. And the ferry is, Costa Mina is the only ferry on the system that takes less than the legal length on the highway. It's an extension to Paul Green Highway, supposedly an extension to the highway. But the Costa Mina does not take legal load on the highway, which is around 65 feet. All the other ferries will take that, I believe.
It won't take a...
No, it'll take...
Tractor trailer?
Because it has, that's right, it has an elevator, you see. It has a special elevator due to the fact that it was designed to go into Anchorage. And because of the high tides. And so the elevator is 41 feet long. And so your tractor trailer can only be 40 feet long. Well, that's not an efficient rig on the road, especially with today's high fuel costs. So people have gotten around this using 40-foot trailers. They found that if you have two tractors, and you put, and one being a very sharp one, and you put that in the hole, you can get a 40-foot trailer on there. But the ferry system doesn't keep, I always thought that one should be a responsibility of the ferry system, but the ferry system doesn't think so, and they don't keep the tractor there. So you have these people that, as a result of this, like this fellow here in Kodiak, there's one in Tour, there's one in Homer, and they specialize in doing this, but they require a pretty good service fee for furnishing that extra tractor to get your load on there. So if you want to put a 40-foot van on the Costa Mina, you're going to pay the last time I did it was about three or four years ago in Seward, and it was $37.50, and then it was after 8 or 9 o'clock at night, it went up another to about $50, and I would suspect that it's probably approaching $75, and you see
each side.
Yeah, each side. But now you own your equipment. You don't usually take it one way. You know, you have to take it both ways because you usually have own your equipment. You see, and so that means that You have to pay for it in Kodiak, put it on the ferry. You have to pay it in Seward or Homer to take it off, which is the second time. And then you take your rig, and you can go to Palmer or Delta or wherever you go. I've had a lot of experience with this because I bought grain in Canada for a number of years and had it shipped into Seward on a rail car, and then I hauled it to the rail car there. So then you come back and you have to pay it again in Seward or Homer, put it on the Costa Mina, and again in Kodiak when you get back. And sometimes they have an across the dock charge that we had here for a couple of years, and that adds to the cost of that. So that gives you kind of an example on what, and it's these things that make it.
Right. Who's got an across the dock job?
There is one now, but there was one in Seward for several years, about 10 years ago, and then Kodiak had one here too for several years.
This is a municipal charge.
Pardon?
Municipal charge.
Yes, it was a municipal charge. I don't think there's one in existence now, but there was. We had to pay it for a while.
It was finally ruled out. There's a lot of opposition to that.
But you do have to pay. You do have to pay the toll. Now, it would seem to me like the solution to that problem would be just for the ferry to have a small tractor, single axle tractor on there, a stub nose tractor that they could use to jockey those trailers around. But their point of view is that, well, we'd have to have an extra man on board all the time to do that, and that extra man across the state. Apparently, I don't know what the Teamsters agreement is, but they'd have to have a Teamster on there. I don't know what the thing is. But when you mention it to somebody, they can find all kinds of reasons why it shouldn't be done. Just like I talked to the ferryman about a reduced rate one time, like you would coming up with, and he could think of all kinds of reasons why that. Every other natural resource, he said, every other natural resource hauler in the state would be wanting to have the same kind of rate. And the ferry doesn't make money now, so why should they do it?
That would be an interstate deal. We're talking about intrastate.
Yeah.
I think we're entitled to break one.
I think so, too.
I don't know if you're aware or not, but the Sealand
they put on 12 vans when I went across, because they have their tractor trucks in Seward and Homer. Anyway, so there's no problem there. But
they just use their own.
They use their own. And it's more advantageous to them to use the ferry and pay the rate than just to send a ship down here.
Sure.
With an anchor. So they're getting quite a break, Sealand, and I work there. You can't hardly tell what they might do, but usually they go to Anchorage and once a year. Anchorage first, then go to Anchorage. Sometimes, often they'll divert them right at sea, you know. You never know what they're going to do. 1 hour to the next, that's why I'm late tonight.
But what's their normal?
Well, normal routes to Anchorage to Kodiak. Back to Seattle.
So it doesn't come to Anchorage?
Yeah, it comes to Seattle, Anchorage, Kodiak, Seattle. Most of the freight goes to Anchorage, so that's the first stop. And the backhaul originates here in Kodiak, and so they try to go directly from here to Seattle.
And of course, one thing I think is in Alaska's favor now could be the meat industry. We have direct routes to Japan from Alaska.
Well, part of the thrust of developing the grain production in the interior was to produce a feed base for a livestock industry in Alaska. And, you know, if we've got a livestock industry that's viable here, there ought to be some way of working out the transportation costs.
Well, the money was put into a program to work out
But over right now, if we had a decent freight rate on the ferry, could we afford to haul barley from Delta at $110 a ton?
That is what you
would do. If we could haul it in quantity. Yes.
Is that the ferry selling?
Well, that's what they priced it for.
Well, number one, I don't think you'd want to haul $120 barley because that's the number two barley price.
Right. That's a prime barley.
So you would be looking at the number
you
two barley.
You won't feed barley.
Yeah, but it would not make number two, so you'd get something less than that. I suppose, maybe, I don't know what it is.
Well, the way fuel costs are going now, and of course, I don't know what barley is going to be, you know, this year, you know, low. I would think if you what is number three worth?
I don't think there's enough of it to establish a price.
No, if number two is 120, well, then number three is probably probably call $100 a ton. Of course, you're talking about real high fuel costs. You know, diesel. You might you can't do it with gasoline, and you can't do it with small trucks. You just can't. You've got to be taking maximum.
But you've
got to be taking a trailer load down. You know.
You're talking about the same kind of cost no matter where you buy your barley.
Yeah.
Right. You're talking about that increase in costs. It's not for you to Delta.
No, that's right.
It might be a Sealand van on the, as long as they come Anchorage Kodiak.
Well, you see, here's another problem. Sealand charges, Sealand charges about two-thirds of the Seattle Kodiak rate just to come from Anchorage over here. Like it's 1,500 miles from here, from Seattle up to here. But, and they take the vans around to Anchorage. But it costs about two-thirds. They charge about two-thirds just to come 300 miles down here. See, it would be helpful if the legislature can act on this. It would be helpful if the tariff hearings for these big carriers, if these hearings as far as agricultural products were held here in the state, we would suffer the bottom, so we would test the bottom. But that's the way it is. It costs... It just costs too much to have. I don't think you can have Sealand. I don't think the rate is competitive. I think it would cost as much or more to get barley from Seattle by Sealand from Delta to Kodiak than it would from Seattle.
Unless some adjustment.
There's room for negotiation. If you could assure them at some time of some potential volume, then they're willing to talk. But until such time, you can
sure.
Or some potential water infiltration.
Wouldn't be able to get the barge to the water, you know, in the real head.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then you can put it on the barge and bring that to the
get a rate from the air, from the railroad port, it was $28 a year.
$28.
That should be loaded in the
that's right.
Should be unloaded in the bulk of the year. Loaded in dollar, transported in money.
That's
I think the difference was we were looking for a rate to get the body that we were going to ship outside to a port facility to handle it. The figure has a big warehouse that they said would be destroyed.
How would
they do the same thing there? I don't think it's going to talk much different.
Should be. It's a little shorter than what a year.
Not all that much.
It seems very desperate.
I bet you can push the same price to or even if you want to use a portable auger, you probably get the same thing as bass.
Well, I've unloaded those hot cars, and they're not the easiest thing to do it, but they're not the
anyway.
Anyway,
I'm hungry. I'm hungry.
If you've got the, I don't mind.
Oh, you'll last a little while longer.
That kind of is that I would like to toss out, and it might be, I guess this question would be, is if I was going out to chase them or not, do you fellows here in Kodiak have some question of the industry that you think this agriculture group ought to look at, that they go out to Kodiak, out to chase? In relation to the industry as a whole. In other words, should they be asking, well, would you guys be interested in moving live cattle to Kodiak? Or would you back a interstate transportation network that would serve the chain? Or whatever. Do you have anything that you've thought about or talked about that would associate the Kodiak industry with the Aleutian industry that these guys should be aware of when they go on this kind of a work tour?
Go ahead and say it, Jeff.
Well, I'd be interested in knowing, you know, what those fellows are doing out there and what they plan to sell.
It's just like Nick. He really doesn't have to eat, but he sure likes to every once in a while.
Well, in the 30 years,
remind me that
I've known quite a few who have been involved up in the sheep business. And one of their main problems is doing is they have no market to do. So I don't know if they are as far out again, but they just don't know way to probably another transportation problem.
I think it's too far away. It's long ways. If they have that one going there in Umnak, and it's just so much easier to transport meat than it is live cattle over a longer distance. I'm not sure.
Here are two different stories on that. You can't make it easier to transport them on the hook than it is refrigerated. Japanese
beef. Well, For one thing, if you're talking about, I don't know whether you're talking about stocker cattle and feeder cattle, which have to be transported live, or whether you're talking about fat cattle. But fat cattle are much easier to transport after they've been, after they're dead, for a couple of different reasons. Number one, you're only transporting about 60% of the product, because about 40% is waste or a product of low quality or things like that. The stomach, for instance, you don't have to transport the stomach. Okay, you do have to refrigerate the product, but in this day and age, refrigeration is pretty minor. I haul beef between here and Anchorage without refrigerating. If you have a good insulated van, and get it chilled down, it'll keep the insulated truck for 24 to 36 hours. But of course, coming from the solutions, you want to be careful. So you can transport twice as much weight, almost, for the same, what I want to say is that with cattle, you're only going to get, if you're transporting cattle in a van, in a trailer, say 40,000 pounds of cattle, you're only going to have 25,000 pounds of beef when you get wherever you're going. So you can transport 40,000 pounds of payload of beef in that same thing. All right, then another thing is that you're going to have quite a shrink on live cattle, and you're subject to bruises and things like that when you're transporting long distance like that. You need to, after about 36 hours, you need to have a rest stop for them, or certainly 48 hours. For instance, on Alaska, I guess maybe it doesn't need it to make it 48 hours, but that's kind of stressful to do it. We'll see fishing boats, I don't think it's a problem. So,
I don't think anyone would be moving fish back. Because number one, they don't have anything to eat.
Right, alright. But if you're going to, let's say slaughtering three-year-old steer, fat cows, or something like that. If you get it slaughtered and out there, and ship the meat home. But now, if you're halfway out, then if you're, let's say you're at Sandpoint, or you're at Dog Eye, or you're at Cold Bay, or somewhere in that neighborhood, Sanac, by then, it would seem to me like there's no slaughter out there anyway, so you don't have any choice.
I'm right back to that old bugaboo, the transportation seems to be one of the major problems.
I thought that they can be on the market developed in Japan. They've got two steamships running from Dutch Harbor, frequently now, APL and Sealand. And if it's a matter of trade-off where we can bring a little pressure on the Japanese to buy our product, I don't see why not, but they're getting all of our timber, they're getting all of our fish, and I should think we're going to buy some of the cattle. I understand that they buy most of their beef from Argentina, not Argentina, but Australia and New Zealand, and it's on a quota basis. And the Japanese are very susceptible to many grades. They have about 15 grades in their herring roe, and many grades of fish. And I would think, regardless of what our grade is, it could be a market thing.
Well, there probably is. I think, though, and I'm not very well versed on it, but quite possibly this is something that Nick should do, is find out about just what the potential is for selling. It seems to me like that surely our hide should go there. I think it seems like that the only American cattle that are going to Japan are either breeding cattle or fine beef cattle that are going there from the hotel grade. I think Japan can probably buy the lower grades of cattle elsewhere cheaper, from New Zealand and Australia.
You check that out, have you? Yeah, we checked that. We checked out the quota system. The quota system is an artificial system. It's supposed to protect the Japanese beef industry. The Japanese beef industry is geared towards a very high quality animal. And of course, the quota, therefore, is against the United States and small animals. And that's something. That's why it doesn't affect the Australians. Because if you're going to raise beef in Japan, they're going to raise a very high rate. That's the stuff that they decide to get.
I would like to see. I do think you should concentrate your research on, since we do have ships going there now, and since I've heard that a lot of that ties your can now, right? Because of someone from Japan, maybe you don't need enough ice to even make it worthwhile, but it seems like there might be a market there for our
ties.
Modern part of the packing house, but the hide is kind of the profit margin.
Right.
They call it the fifth quarter or something.
What's the chance of maybe any bill and stuff that blatant agriculture is maybe send a list of them? What the chances are of
it passing? There is, and I'll do it.
That way, maybe.
Let's put it another.
No problem.
That's not even a logistical problem. You have, you have 174.
What's the chance of that one bill that you were sponsoring that?
Land trade for speculative value?
Yeah.
I think it's good if we can educate the other legislators if you the reason they need it and all the tax dollars. Of course, it's a strange concept that they're giving us here. I've talked to him privately, individually, and I haven't been able to go, that's a good idea. But Kelly's working up a deal that sets it out in the brochure tomorrow, which I think is her own personal idea. I think it's a good idea to get it. So it's a brochure type thing you can pass out.
The
kinds of
concept. The Japanese English sausage.
No. The Japanese themselves?
The Japanese eat lots of sausage. Various kinds of sausage. Mutton, whale.
I'll tell you this, all kinds the sausage you get in Japan is wild and soft. Awful. It has no taste at all. It's not good in there. Lamb and frog.
What kind of sausage do you think about? They would well, make I'll sausage. We get some low-cut meats.
I'll tell you, we get into the sausage business, it might be a market.
I think you're looking at sausage bread.
They have a weird taste for sausage. I think they taste like it. I could be
Yeah,